Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
There you are, Noah. Oh, Noah, way to go. And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we are here with Christopher J. O'Shea. Christopher, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, sir. And how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And we're supposed to have a guest tonight, but he hasn't called in yet. So we're going to have to try to find out where he is.
Okay.
In the interim, that's okay. I had a couple things I needed to go over anyway. First off, congratulations, Christopher. You've become a certified financial planner once again, actually.
Again, right. Thank you. Appreciate that.
You passed the test two times. No, you didn't take the full-blown, or did you?
Well, you took it differently last time. You took them individually.
Okay.
One at a time.
One at a time.
Then they would say, well, why don't you do it all at one time?
So this time you did it all at one time, and you've taken a sabbatical from us for a while. When you came back, you had to get it over again. It's not like your CPA credential that you were able to maintain during that sabbatical, but CFP's made you take it over again, and you said, okay, I'll show you, and whammo, you know. And our other, you're going to give a shout-out to our other colleague?
Oh, sure. Graham is Graham's my hero.
Graham Ewing.
That's right.
Make sure everybody knows which Graham we're talking about. I know there is only one Graham, but Graham Ewing, our colleague, yep. Associate planner, who is now, he actually has to wait until January to become a full certified financial planner because he hasn't been in the profession for 3 years now. I think that's what it is. 3 years or is it 2 years?
Sure. That's right.
3 years.
Well, yeah, they look at it a couple of different ways. You can only count things that have happened in the last 10 years. So they have their own way of doing things.
There you go. So anyway, we give a big shout out to Graham. And also, I had a couple other things too. Call me a cynic, you know?
Never. Well, why would I call you a cynic?
This is an election.
Skeptical.
This is a big election year, right? In Maryland.
Somebody said it. It's silly season.
It's you have a gubernatorial race.
Yep.
I don't know. Do we have a senator up this year?
No.
No. So we have congressmen and all the things, but you do have a governor race, and. Does it seem to you like they're paving a lot of roads lately?
Actually, yes. I hadn't thought about that, but yes.
And a lot of roads that they're paving, I think to myself, why are you paving that road? I mean, there's no need for it. Interstate 83, we drive that thing all the time. You know, it wasn't in perfect shape, but it wasn't in bad shape in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, it seems like they're wasting an incredible amount of money paving roads everywhere. And, you know, you just have to try to put the two together and say, is there something economic that happens between paving roads and running for elected office or something? I mean, that's the cynic in me, you know? It's just horrible that you have to think that way because it makes no sense.
A showy form of government, is that what you're saying?
Either that or you've got money coming back to them as they pay for roads and things. Money comes back to them. You know, I have no idea, but it's hard to understand all the roads that they're paving. They paved that little road in front of our office there, International Circle, and you kept asking yourself, why? Why are they paving this thing? What the heck is the purpose for this, you know? But they did it. There were no potholes in it. It wasn't a bumpy road in any way, shape, or form, but they paved it. So, also in today's technology, you got to, you know, with epoxies and compounds and so forth, you got to think there's a better way than shutting roads down, all they do, and grading them down and then shutting them down to come in and put a layer on and then put another layer on and so forth and so forth. You got to figure there's got to be a cheaper, more economical way to do it than that.
Yeah. It's political, and I can just another story is in Harford County in the 90s, there was population growth was either the second fastest growing county at the time in the state, and yet no new high schools were being built. And so it wasn't done until 15 years later. Now all of a sudden everybody's getting a $35 million high school. And it's just amazing because, again, the political winds all lined up and everyone now they're going to do it. And, you know, I don't know where all the money's coming from.
Yeah.
I really don't.
You know, the thing we were going to talk about tonight with our guests, and tell everybody who our guest was and was.
Oh, is that right?
Or we hope it is, but we're right now it's was.
Okay. Well, yeah, we have Stephen Moore, who...
We had.
We were planning.
We're planning to. We'll have.
We were planning. At some point in time, we're going to speak to Stephen Moore, who we've... you reminded me. We interviewed him a long time ago.
A long time
ago. I followed his career for 25, 30 years. He's about our age. Do we think he's...
Go ahead. Yeah, I think he is. Go ahead.
Okay. And so I followed his career for a long time. He's been around ever since the 80s in making an impact in economic matters, both, you know, from a... So he is now... He wrote on the economy and public policy for the Wall Street Journal. I'm just going to go ahead and read this. He's a chief economist at the Heritage Foundation. He was also a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board. He returned to Heritage in January of this year, 25 years after his tenure as the leading conservative think tank's Grover M. Herman Fellow in Budgetary Affairs from 84 to 87. And so he's written widely. He's been really a partner along in the years with Arthur Laffer. People may remember the name Art Laffer being associated with the Laffer curve, supply side economics, and there's been a lot of distortion on what that actually is over the years. And whenever we get to talk to Stephen Moore, we'll be able to turn from that into his latest book, which he's
Wealth of States. Okay. Well, let's get him on the line.
Okay.
All right. Noah, you got him? All right. Stephen, are you there?
Hi, good evening. Great to be with you.
Well, it's good to be with you. We appreciated the book you wrote, Wealth of States, and we do this radio show from Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland, into Washington, D.C., and we've always said that Maryland is sitting on a powder keg of economic policy because if it weren't for the pork coming out of Washington, D.C., Maryland would be in serious trouble because of the economic policy we implement. And here you write this book that pretty much supports that theory. And so we wanted to talk to you about this, the research you did.
Yeah, well, look, Maryland is doing all the wrong things.
You know,
yep. I mean, if you look at everything Maryland has done in the last 4 or 5 years with respect to its economy, the higher taxes, the higher fees, over 20 tax increases in the last, 5 years in Maryland.
Well,
rates have gone up.
That's our governor's way of running for president, sir.
Yeah, well, that's not a much of a record to run on.
Well, that's what he thinks it is.
More regulation. The schools are worse. There's nothing to brag about. And I love Maryland. I used to live there, and I love Baltimore. It's just a tragedy the way that the politicians have really ruined this state. Maryland is a blue state when you've got all these red states that are cutting their taxes, cutting regulation. And so you see businesses moving out of Maryland. I live in Virginia right now. There are a lot of businesses that move out of Maryland and a lot of, families that move out of Maryland to Virginia in part because of taxes, in part because, services are better in Virginia even though taxes are lower.
Right. And that's something that Drew has been urging clients who are retiring and have the means to do that. To move out of the state. He's done that for years now.
Yeah.
Well, especially if I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I believe that Maryland has a death tax. So, if you're someone with, several millions of dollars of lifetime savings, you probably don't want to die in Maryland because you're going to have to fork over, as much as 10% of that to the Maryland Revenue Department.
And we had a client, Stephen, that absolutely loved the Maryland. He'd lived here since he was born. He was a diehard Marylander. And one day I sat down with him and I said, Doc, it's going to cost you and your family $2.2 million to die in this state. And he looked at it and he said, I think I'm going to go down to Florida and see how it's like down there. And he took a little trip to Florida, and now he wears flip-flops and Hawaiian shirts all day long and thinks it's wonderful.
Yeah, and the problem for Maryland is that means he doesn't spend anything in, you know, Maryland any longer. His business is out of Maryland. So, you know, it's a total loser for the state. I mean, anyone is crazy to die in Maryland when you can go to, you know, Tennessee or Texas or Florida or Arizona and pay no estate tax at all. That, by the way, that story you told, you know, there are hundreds of stories like that, you know, that
absolutely
happen every year of people moving out of. You know, I did a big story when I was at the Wall Street Journal about the millionaires who moved out of Maryland.
Yep, I read
after
that.
They raised the taxes on the rich. You know,
yep,
you
I read that.
Tax on the rich, and guess
yep
what? The rich aren't there anymore to tax.
Stephen, you got to hold on for us. I got to do traffic 1 second. We're going to come back. I know you can only stay right with us until 6:30, but we'll do what we can when we come back. Okay, so hold on.
Right, sure.
Let's go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We have Stephen Moore with us. He wrote the book Wealth of States. He talks about what happens to states that have bad legislative policy, bad economic taxing policy, and so forth. Stephen, with the advent of technology and the baby boomers retiring, this whole trend of people looking for low-tax areas is accelerating. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you see it in the data where, you know, it's very simple. That you see this, for example, in the moving van data, where you have to pay a lot more if you want to, for example, rent a moving van to move from, let's say, Baltimore to Fort Lauderdale versus Fort Lauderdale to Baltimore, because all of the direction is south, not north. And so, you know, we are seeing an acceleration of this. And of course, the reason that people are moving to these southern states is because taxes are lower and because not just because taxes are lower. There are a lot of reasons why people move. I mean, the weather is nicer in the south generally than it is in the northern states. But more importantly, that's where the jobs are. I mean, Texas gained 1/3 of all the jobs in the beginning of the recovery, for example. One state, 1/3 of all the jobs. Tennessee is booming. Florida is doing much better. You just see the Northeast is the people is bleeding to death as people move to the south in states like Arizona and Utah and the Dakotas and places where taxes are lower, regulations are lighter, and there's more choices for people the way they live their life.
Sure. Well, Stephen, as we talk about, it isn't solely taxes. There are other things that you look at, as Drew said, legislative policies and that sort of thing. But just to focus early on and what you do throughout the book, you talk about post-1960, 11 states have adopted an income tax. What's happened to those states in the last 50 years?
By the way, the other, just to set the record clear, the other, we find the taxes are very, you know, income taxes are a very big factor on where people move to, so they move to lower income tax places. The other factor that's really huge is whether a state is right to work, and I do not believe Maryland is a right to work state, is it?
I don't think we're right to anything.
No, I'm pretty sure that Maryland is
no
a force.
No, we're not.
So
we're not. Yes.
Now, Virginia is, and so that's a battle there.
Yeah, so Virginia's right to work, and Maryland is not right to work. And that's another reason why a lot of the factories, plants, and jobs go to these states that are, in the South. But your point is, you know, there were 11 states since 1990 that adopted the income tax. And of those 11 states, all of them, once they adopted the income tax over the last 40 years, have lost jobs and income relative to the rest of the country. So they're growing a lot more slowly in their states.
When I look at your charts in here, and if anybody grabs this book and looks at all the different charts you see, you constantly see the same thing over and over, and that is the lowest tax states are at the top of the economic ladder, and the highest tax states are at the bottom of the economic ladder, and then you see a few outliers in, you know, high tax states that are doing okay, and low tax states that are doing not as great. But still, the evidence is overwhelming.
Well, it certainly is, and that's what the book is all about. I mean, you know, you look at the 9 states that have no income tax, those states like Texas and Tennessee and Florida and Wyoming and South Dakota and Nevada and Washington and a few others. They've been growing jobs by 2 to 3 times the pace that a state like Maryland has. And so, you know, if you want to know where the action is in this country, it's in those states that have low income taxes or no income tax and states that are right to work, and a lot of times those are one and the same.
You know, Stephen, I'm a financial advisor. I work with a lot of clients, fairly well-to-do clients that are retiring. And, you know, I didn't have to read this book, Wealth of the States, to know what was happening. I repeat it every week, at least once or twice a week. Somebody comes in and says, we're looking to retire. And at least 80 to 90% of the time, the next word out of their mouth is, and we're moving to Delaware, and we're moving to Georgia, and we're moving to Florida. And it's always for the same reason, lower cost of living and lower taxes.
The thing that's amazing is that there are still economists like Paul Krugman and a lot of the, you know, people at the New York Times who say that taxes don't matter. I mean, how can they say taxes don't matter? I mean, are they looking at what's happened with these companies that are leaving the United States to save on their corporate taxes? Now, if companies will move across national boundaries to lower their taxes, is it so hard to figure out that businesses and families will move across a state border to save on their taxes? Of course they do that, especially when it comes down to the fact that these low-tax states oftentimes have better services than that. Look, it would be one thing if the low-tax states didn't have good public services, but, you know, it's not hard to find states that have a lot better public services than Maryland does.
Yeah, I would agree. You had a quote in here, and I wanted to see if I could find it real quick. It's about how the future is going to be. Here it is, haves and have-nots, page 122. You know, that there's going to be the states that have not and the states that have, and it's, you know, and that there's going to be these economic inequality lines drawn between those states.
The income inequality is actually higher in states like Maryland and New York and California than states that don't have income taxes. That's the amazing thing. These states that have high taxes, they say, oh, we're doing this for fairness. Well, actually, income inequality is higher in states like California and New York and Maryland and my home state of Illinois than it is in states like Texas and Florida and the Dakotas and so on. So even from the standpoint of fairness, these policies don't work very well.
Well, Maryland bragged about when there was all these studies about people, millionaires, leaving the state of Maryland. They bragged about the fact that we had all these millionaires who moved in to replace the ones that left. That's what they said.
Well, there were some, but not many. You know, Maryland, relative to the rest of the country, lost millionaires after the tax increase when you raise taxes. Especially you could see that in, you know, the places like Montgomery County, which is, you know, one of the wealthiest counties in the country. You know, people moved out of there, and they moved to places like, you know, Fairfax County, Virginia, or they moved to Florida, Texas, and so on. And so, you know, this is the thing that amazes me after writing the book and showing the evidence so overwhelmingly in the book. There are still people who deny that the taxes matter. It's
right.
Amazing.
Sure, and as recently as last month, you had an exchange where you wrote an article, and Krugman again was talking at Kansas now, because they, for 18 months, they've dropped the top rate from 6% income tax to 3.9%, and he's saying the economy's lagging. You're giving it 18 months, that's, you know, it's over. It's not doing anything. And you said, well, wait a minute, the clock's still running here.
I mean, you'd be surprised how many people just refuse to believe the evidence. And I appreciate very much your taking some time to, promote the book and the ideas in it, which is that, you know, low taxes and good public services are what people want in their state. And they're just not getting it in Maryland. They're not getting it in my home state of Illinois. And if you fix that problem, people will come back and those states will revive.
Now, New Hampshire, though, is a low-tech state, and its numbers are good in some areas, but not as good always overall. Why do you think that is, or am I misinterpreting some of your numbers here? The way I saw it, it seemed... Did we lose him? Noah, did we lose him?
Yep.
All right. Well, we lost him. Maybe he didn't like that question.
No, he'll take any question.
You think that was what it was?
He's listening to Paul Krugman.
I can be like that, Chris.
No comment. He's discussed things with Paul Krugman and the like for a long time.
Are you going to find out if he's coming back? It was an accident, though, obviously. So anyway, let me give you this one, Chris. There was an article just today at Tax Foundation. They did an analysis of what the average cost of living in. Well, in other words, what would $100 buy on average in the United States of America?
Right.
And then they went on to say, okay, take it state by state, taxes and cost of living and so forth. where are you going to get the biggest bang for your $100? What states? And it was like Mississippi and Arkansas and Alabama. And what are the states that you're going to get the worst bang for your buck? And here it was. The worst was Washington, D.C.
Okay.
The second worst was Hawaii.
Wow.
The third worst was New York.
Okay. I was going to say New Jersey's got to be in the top seven or eight.
They were up there, but New York was the third worst. Georgia was the fourth worst, and Maryland was the fifth worst. I don't think New Jersey actually made it into the list until around number seven or eight.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I figured somewhere in there. Well, you said it earlier. It's pretty obvious if you look at the whole record, Mr. O'Malley has been running for the Democratic nomination for president for a long time. He's been doing all the things with energy and climate and windmills and taxes and all these things.
He literally believes that because he passed laws to raise taxes on the quote-unquote wealthy, that he is in a better position to be the Democratic candidate and to be president of the United States. It is an absolutely absurd concept that anybody would vote for him on that, but that's his theory. Hey, he's sticking to it, though. Hey, Noah, we got to take a break. We're going to traffic, and Maggie Hunter... And are you ready? And there you go. Take it away, Meg.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth here. And, you know, unfortunately, we lost even more as we were winding up that interview. And when we finally were able to get back to him, it was too late. He had to go on to his next meeting.
Sure.
So we appreciate the time that he had, but I just suggest everyone read this book, Wealth of States. And, you know, that one thing that was interesting in here is he does point out that oil is a big part of state, and it is the biggest component. If a state has big oil revenue, it maximizes the state gross, what do they call it, the gross state product or something like that, GSP, I guess they called it. And that is a big motivator or big mover of the GSP. It's the biggest one. North Dakota is a great example of that right now. You know, Texas and California, when they were pumping oil like there was no tomorrow, Texas is still doing it. California isn't. And because California isn't, it's been declining ever since in all kinds of numbers, and taxes have been going higher in that state. And the other things he points out is that personal income tax rate is the second biggest mover. Corporate income tax rates are the third. And the fourth one is right to work. And, you know, it's... And, you know, it seems like they do a pretty thorough, comprehensive analysis of all kinds of things and point out that, you know, there's all kinds of issues that are going on here, but the numbers speak for themselves. You know, I don't know how anybody could look at it any other way.
Sure. If you do it, you've got some sort of an agenda that, so the full title is An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of States, Arthur Laffer, Stephen Moore, and two other writers, and we recommend it to fans and critics alike, just to go through it and see how thorough, and over time, people migrate to certain places where there's incentives to do so.
Well, in today's world, where migration is easy to do.
Sure, easier than ever.
And, you know, you can move away from family and still be in connection with them between things like FaceTime and airplanes and you know, interstate traffic and so forth and so forth. You can live a good ways away and still be very well connected with your family. And as the baby boomers age and as technology increases, it's only going to continue to expand. So anyway, we're going to just do an open show for the rest of this show. We got about 15, 20 minutes, 410-922-6680. If you want to talk about this topic or anything else, we're more than happy to do it. We do have Gene on the line. He's been holding very patiently. We're wondering if he's like Stephen Moore and he's hung up too. Anyway, Gene, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Before I get to my question, do you know there are only three states in the out of the 50 that have neither an income tax or a sales tax? You know which ones they are?
Let me think. I would assume
New Hampshire's one, right?
New Hampshire's one.
Wyoming?
No.
Wyoming's not. They have sales tax. Okay, you got Alaska.
Nevada.
And Alaska.
And Alaska. Alaska because of oil, Nevada because of Las Vegas. And this is the question I don't know. how in the heck does New Hampshire pay for anything if they don't have any income tax and they have no sales tax?
Well, their property taxes are fairly high.
I talked to a guy from New Hampshire. They aren't that...
No, they're not bad.
Out of whack.
They're not that bad. I have no idea. I thought the same thing when I was up in New Hampshire that it was...
Unless they just don't provide any services at all.
I tell you, the roads were great, and they didn't have to, and I didn't have to wait for them to be paved every day I was driving around there, you know?
All right, my question is...
Go ahead.
I own a home in Columbia.
Okay.
It's paid for.
Okay.
Now, what if I take some of my savings and I buy another home in an income-free tax state?
Okay.
What are the rules about... but I keep this one.
Okay.
What are the rules, if you know, are familiar with this, about...
It's very...
Which one can I, and under what circumstances, can I declare one my legal residence, therefore I...
It's a very important question, and we deal with it quite often, okay? So, first off, you have to keep in mind that if you change your residency from the Maryland home to another state home, you only have 3 years from the day you do that that you can take the $500,000 capital gain exclusion on the Maryland home being your primary residence. So let's keep that in mind first, Gene, okay?
Okay.
So the second thing is the rule is what is known as domicile. Domicile means what's in your heart. If you went to Europe for a month-long trip and you longed to go home, where would you think? Would you think Maryland or would you think Florida? Let's just say Florida is the tax-free state you chose. Would you choose Maryland? Would you think of Maryland or would you think of Florida? That's what the law is all about. So you could literally be in Maryland 2 months, live in Maryland 2 months, and live in Florida for 6 months and then travel overseas, but your domicile would still be Maryland if in your heart you're thinking home is Maryland. Now, you say, well, nobody knows what's in my heart, do they? So I say, you're right. So now the question becomes, what will the court use to try to determine what your domicile is? And the way they'll do that, Gene, is they're going to look at where are you more of the year? Are you more of the year in Florida or are you more of the year in Maryland? They're going to look at where are your doctors, where are your financial people, where are your lawyers, where do you go to church, where do you play golf, where's your country club, where's your driver's license, where are you registered to vote?
Would it be enough to, let's say, drop your Maryland registration for your vehicles and
oh, absolutely. I would say you would have to do that. If you're going to tell them your domicile is now in Florida, you absolutely have to drop your registration for your car and for your licenses and so forth. You're going to have to drop your homestead tax credit in Maryland and move it to Florida, which then you only have 3 years to sell the Maryland home to make it your personal residence. You know, I would move some of my main memorabilia out of Maryland and take it to Florida with me. You really have to make Florida your home. I mean, that's literally what the law is all about. Florida has to become your home.
What if you literally do 6 months here and 6 months there?
You could very easily be attacked by the state tax people, and I would agree with them wholeheartedly that they should come after you if you just did half and half. You literally have to make it your home. It has to change. And a lot of times I say to clients, just sell the place in Maryland and rent here, you know, rent a place or buy a smaller place and buy your main place down there in Florida, et cetera, et cetera. So there's lots of things you have to consider, Gene. It's not a simple thing of 181 days in Florida and 179 days in Maryland and boom, I'm a Floridian. It's not that easy. And if they do the research, if they come after you, they're going to look at your cell phone, they're going to look at your credit cards, they're going to look at where you voted, they're going to look at where your registrations are, they're going to look at your driver's license, they're going to look at where your memorabilia is, they're going to look at your church. Well, I hope so, because, you know, I'm a CPA. I have to tell people the honest truth. I can't help people to just overcome the law. I have to make sure they abide by the law.
Right.
All right?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Gene. Good question. Very good question. I'm going to Lee in Towson. Lee, how can we help you?
I want to talk about U.S. debt. A friend of mine has been reading some Russian newspapers because she has a Russian background, and they're talking about we're about to explode sometime with a debt like a balloon.
So you're asking, is that true?
Well, what happened is, can I marshal to suggest that it's not going to happen in the next couple of years?
Well, I doubt seriously it's going to happen in the next couple of years. But, we are running some pretty poor economic policy as if we can just borrow money unlimited into the future. Now, the United States debt-to-equity ratio, or debt-to-GDP ratio right now is about 75% if you don't consider Social Security. If you consider Social Security and what we owe Social Security, it's about 105% debt-to-equity or debt-to-GDP. And of the $16 trillion we owe about $4 trillion of that to foreign countries, including countries like Russia. So, Japan's debt-to-GDP ratio is 210% of debt-to-GDP, but almost 100% of that is owed to the Japanese people and the Japanese central bank. So the point is that our economic policy has serious limitations, but the politicians think they can just keep doing it, and we're the United States of America, and we're the reserve currency. If we ever lost that reserve currency status, then we have to be very concerned as Americans as to the amount of money we're borrowing.
Well, isn't that what's happening now?
They're working on it. Now, Russia has already said we have to de-Americanize the world. That's what the Russians are after. They're after trying to figure out how to de-Americanize, de-dollarize the world so that we are no longer the world reserve currency and so that the United States can't just run around the world doing whatever they want to do.
Right, but right now there's no alternative. So that's what the U.S. has going for it.
Right now, there's no reason to think that it's going to end anytime soon, but you have to lay your investment philosophy down with some protection on if it does happen. You have to assume that it can happen, and you do have to be careful. All right?
Okay.
All right, good question. I wish I could read Russian newspapers. That'd be pretty interesting. I hear Vladimir Putin is extremely popular over there.
Well, he'll tell you so.
Yeah, he may be riding a tank next week or something.
I'll tell you what he's doing now is not doing anything for the movement that China and Russia are trying to come together to
dollarize, Americanize the world.
Right. Sure. Right.
Hey, Rush. Hey, Noah, we got to go to Mark Thibodeau and weather. We'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth. And we're back. Money, riches, and wealth, and we had been interviewing Stephen Moore. We didn't get as much in as we had hoped, but we had a good bit. And I wanted to read that quote I mentioned earlier, and he says, growth economics is the approach that has made America great, separated Americans from other countries' citizens, and made the United States the envy of the world. And in the future, the line between the haves and the have-nots will be between economic policies of states that commit to growing their economies and lifting people up, and those states that choose to grow government and keep people down by making their citizens dependent on government.
Wow.
That was what Friedrich Hayek said back in like 1940-something. He wrote a book called The Road to Serfdom. And when you allow government to take over all these different services because, it's good, you're basically going to be told that you can't drink a big soda anymore. You're going to be told you have to wear a seatbelt. You're going to be told you can't ride a motorcycle without a helmet. You're going to be told that you got to get this, vaccine, and you got to get this and so forth, and you got to go here, and your children come to school, and they got to do this, and they got to do that, and so forth. And, and everybody's going to be sitting out there, and they're going to have their pet peeves. Oh, that's a good thing, and oh, that's a good thing. But you wait, we'll see. how far government's going to push us in the future and take away our freedoms and tell us what we can and cannot do, you know?
Sure. And I think one of the things about this book, to me, is one of the surprising pieces to it, is they think when taxes are down, they're lowered, you think that government services are then lower. Whatever you think, whatever's necessary. Again, there's,
oh, yeah,
there's needs out there.
Delaware has bad roads. That's what you always hear. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. They have bad roads. But, you know, what he says in the book is that the statistics don't show it. That the schools are better, the roads are better, the bridges are safer, et cetera, than the states that are taxing
healthcare,
lots of money.
They even say that there's more healthcare workers. It's hard to judge. Well, what do you mean it's, healthcare is better? Well, they judge it based on the amount of healthcare workers in each state. And so where are people migrating to? And so, again, it's between states and, it, I don't know, it's mind-boggling over time when you think that there are times when the state, whether it's a county executive or the governor, will say, we want to entice a business to come, so we're going to lower taxes for them. Or we're trying to discourage behavior smoking, so we're going to raise taxes. Well, that's what happens. When you tax something, you're discouraging it. If you're taxing income, you're discouraging income. If you lower taxes to get business to come, you're encouraging production.
Sure.
And so if you just keep that in mind as you're legislating, be a pretty simple ballgame.
Well, you know, you're seeing this week, you know, McCormick came out and said, we're going to consolidate our corporate headquarters and we're going to, you know, move everything into this, et cetera, okay? And, you know, I would bet anything that they are saying that because, well, one, they want to consolidate, but two, I also think that they saw what they, you know, the state of Maryland just did for Amazon. And, you know, it's a very polite way of negotiating with Maryland and saying, look, you did a lot of things for Amazon for them to come here. And, you know, while we're looking to make some changes and, you know, for us to stay here in Baltimore County and Maryland, it would be real nice that you make a really nice deal for us on this. And so anyway, we're toward the end of the show, and I've said it before. Look, you know, when a state is dependent upon one industry, and Maryland is dependent on government, the industry
Maryland is dependent on is government.
Yep. 60% of all workers or more are dependent on government for their paycheck, and government is going to take it on the chin someday in the future. They're not going to be able to continue to spend as they have, and we've seen it around the world started to happen, and Maryland needs to diversify its base into other things. And the only way they're going to do that is start attracting business here with good tax policy and economic policy, not with bullcrap of telling Amazon, I'm going to give you a special deal to come to this state. Amazon isn't really coming to this state. They're just putting a facility here. And with everything they gave them, it makes it worthwhile. The gubernatorial election is up. People better start thinking about it. One day we're going to wake up very sad.
That's right.
Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli, Money, Riches, and Wealth, saying God bless.
Radio 680.